Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of Yevgeny Prigozhin. I almost did Porzingis. My brain cannot see the name Prigozhin without wanting to read it as Porzingis because I'm stupid.
because I'm ignorant and I only know a couple names with
dumb
D's
as hell,
like that.
Y'all. I'm Jack. That is Miles.
Hey.
It is early Monday morning, and we're going to get into some of the things that are trending over the weekend. But first, Miles, we like to check in with each other, check in with ourselves, and do a little overrated, underrated.
Should I go first? This feels like bad boosties. Okay, I'll go first. Overrated canapes. I was at a restaurant lounge that had like on their finger food menu, they had like canapes.
Yeah, you were.
And
class,
you know,
class
it was Her Majesty's birthday. Okay. We're thinking, all right, let's do something interesting. I'm like, I know that word, and I know it's like an appetizer. And then it comes out.
That
and
makes
then I'm
one
like,
of us.
That's right. It's this shit. It's, you know, and I, okay, so anyway, all this to say is, you know, a canapé is like anytime a little bread type hors d'oeuvre with some shit stacked on top, finger food, it's like, you know, the one of the most common hors d'oeuvres. But the reason I don't like it is because in my mind, it sounds a lot better than what you actually get when it comes out. I'm like, man, that's just some shit on a slice of bread. I don't know why I thought it was like a more elevated thing. Yeah. And
what's
I didn't realize
how specific. How are we getting to canapé?
Because it's a French word for, I believe, couch. So the food is just resting upon it like a couch, like a canapé.
Or they're inviting you to rest your weary soul upon these delicious.
I guess. But then when you think about it, right, I started looking into it, right? Like, I think the origins may have come from the same place where I forget which Spanish king basically was like, y'all need to be serving food with alcohol. And that's how we got tapas. And then from there, we move on. Yeah. That's why for me, tapas, way better than canapés.
Sí, tapas.
That's what I like.
Less specific, right? Tapas are just small.
Yeah. I like.
I Miles, have you ever dined with us before?
Yeah.
Because we're. you might want to get out a piece of paper and a pen because.
Quick maths, really quick. We like to say 2.63 dishes per 3 people. What?
We do things a little different. Things tapas style.
In the world of like easy foods, I prefer like tapas with like a smaller just a portion, or pinchos like in the north of Spain, which their shit is just a more fucking like, you know, just a wild ass canapé because it's a lot more shit stacked on a piece of bread.
Oh my god, we get it, you've been to Europe. Okay, cool.
Actually, that brings me to another thing. If you go to the north of Italy, completely different.
okay here we go.
But I think it's one of those things, the word. Yeah, no, just the word, I think. And I think just
canapé. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it feels like rich people finger food when really like I'm down for just like a fried mess of onions, you know,
I've never gotten a canapé and been like, man, this is a big piece of food. It's always
overpriced.
They seem to be in an arms race, similar to like early mobile phones where they're trying to make it as small as possible. Like it just gets smaller, smaller.
I feel like it's hard to make too. Yeah.
So my overrated, also from this weekend, is beach without pulp. So at some point when I'm using the Tropicana fresh squeezed orange juice Richter scale as a metaphor here. But at some point when I was a kid, I like decided that the platonic ideal of the beach was sand as pure as the driven snow and like ocean water without anything in it. Mm-hmm. Because like rocks hurt feet. Mm-hmm. And seaweed is nasty. But as an adult, like been taking my kids more to like beaches that have all the shit on them, like have all rocks yeah, and kelp, like
you got it all.
Yeah, kelp, you know, animals in the water. I was at a beach this weekend that like had a tide pool and just the gnarliest shit going on. It's like a fucking lobster and crab, like horror film slaughterhouse. Just,
oh wow.
You know, birds doing dirt.
Yeah.
There were like sea slugs, like just beautifully colored sea slugs.
Wow.
Just that as super producer Brian, just beach so nasty. Ugh, yeah. That beach is so nasty.
Fucking slugs.
But it's, you know, some beaches you can go to and it's just all the stuff from nature documentaries, like the remnants of that washed up on shore. And it was pretty cool. And it gives you a lot of things to like talk to kids about. And there was,
So versus like not a bunch of wild shit at the beach, you kind of just go, and that's the beach, kids.
And there's the beach. Two ingredients to my beach.
What's that? What's that? What's this? What's this? Yeah. Why is that? Why is it eating this?
Yeah.
Can I
get
eat that?
Feel a little smart, making up answers to questions that seem right.
What'd you freestyle?
I think this one's right, but there were a lot of these seaweeds. There were seaweeds with the bubbles in them. And
Yeah.
I was explaining that they are usually anchored to the ocean floor, and then the bubbles float them up to the surface so that they can take advantage of photosynthesis.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that seems right? I'm pretty sure I heard that on Rogan at one point.
Yeah. That feels like one of those answers that it's logical enough that if someone said it with enough confidence, I'm like, yeah. Exactly. Right. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. But anyways, beach with pulp, try them out. Beaches without pulp, they're also more crowded because that's what everybody's looking for.
What is a pulp-free, is there a list? Like, you know, like the pulp-free beaches versus the ones
with extra grit? I just think it's like most of the more popular ones, like the ones where people swim and, because you can't really swim in the tide pool. So like we went and there was like the tide pool area and it was pretty sparsely populated with people. And then like over a little bit was where everyone was like swimming and surfing and doing that stuff. So,
if you
can find one with both, then you're in business.
Thank you.
You want me to go with my underrated?
Yeah. What you got underrated?
I tried the Grimace Shake. It was not, I did not go out of my way to try the Grimace Shake.
And you're alive.
I survived.
Okay.
But my underrated is not necessarily the Grimace Shake itself so much as how little the Grimace Shake tastes like cum, or alternately, how much Grimace's cum tastes like blueberry milkshake. I've never tasted Grimace. It's very blueberry.
Oh, okay. And like a little vanilla, like hint of creamy, or just more like a blueberry smoothie?
Yeah. Like a blueberry, somewhere between a milkshake and a blueberry smoothie.
Got it.
Which, you know, there are reports that certain fruits do,
affect the flavors.
Yeah, affect the flavor of cum. So I don't know. Maybe Grimace is just a real blueberry hog.
It's really the superfoods and antioxidants.
Yeah. But there's also some disturbing reports about what the Grimace Shake is doing.
Oh,
to
my
kids.
God. Who was it?
Shout out to the young people.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got to shout you out. At Ched Earthling tagged us in a fucking TikTok thing on Twitter that was just a bunch of videos of kids trying the Grimace Shake. And it was just smash cutting to them in like terrible physical condition, like passed out on the ground, like in the woods, naked. One kid was like holding his dead friend. Just like, I'm trying the milkshake. Cut to, come on, man, wake up.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Really well done. Most of them, it's just, you know, they cut and then the person's in the same location with their shirt off and grimace shakes splattered all over them. But one of them, they like cut and it like looks like it's a location from the first season of True Detective. The person's just like half naked, leaned up against a tree with like grimace shake dribbling.
Yeah. From...
So congratulations to those young people. Miles, is there something you think is underrated?
I'm a little disappointed that it's wasn't
not
like...
Not
yeah, or like, yeah, it like caused you to have like your blood vessels and your eye burst on one side or something.
Yeah,
like, just too crazy. But okay,
it's also who knows, you know, who knows what, like whether the Grimace Shake is using me as a host, is just like speaking through me
now
and trying to throw people off at scent. Like, you know, like I've fucking partaken
some like Last of Us type shit. Everyone becomes part of like a cordyceps network.
Yeah, exactly.
Like intelligence. For me, underrated, kind of more spiritual, of just being able to like forgive yourself when you're stressed out. I go through like cycles of stress, and you know, people are like, you're so chill. I'm like, no, I can get stressed, baby. Let me tell you what goes on inside this mind. But about like when you get to that point, usually when you're stressed out, you'll like most of us have this idea of going like, why am I stressed out? I shouldn't be stressed out. I don't want to be stressed out. I don't like being stressed out. Why am I stressed out? I don't like this. This is not good. This is not. And then you're just stuck in that shit versus being able to just say, I'm stressed. Okay. But also I'm gonna forgive myself for being stressed, because I don't need to beat my own shit up for being stressed, because I have to have some level of self-awareness to know that it's a pattern I have. And then moving through it from that side rather than like the fighting it, like, why the fuck you just be like, yo, chill. Stop that fucking pattern of rumination for a second. Give yourself a little break. Put your hand on your heart and say,
on your heart,
I forgive myself. It's okay. You're going through it. But
Indy,
just
cover
just
your heart. Also, like, your brain was not designed for this world, and it, like, hijacks itself all the time. But, yeah, I do that so much where I have a bad feeling and then get mad at myself, or, like, some part of my brain, like, blames myself for having the bad feeling, and then that compounds on itself.
Because you get, like, the high school football coach's way of problem solving, where it's like, come on, O'Brien, get over it.
Where's your
like,
mental your toughness?
Yeah, and I'm like, what? And then you get all fucked up because you're like, yeah, that's right. This is bullshit. And then rather than just, like, acknowledging, it's really just about acknowledging first and then moving from it there. It's resisting, baby. It's the resistance that hurts.
Yeah. What you resist will persist. Am I in therapy? You decide for yourself.
You look at my bills.
All right, let's talk the Russian rebellion.
Wow.
Russians are just over there doing their thing, vying for our attention, like the messy little bitches they are. But yeah,
you need to be more about you.
Yes, geez.
What
we get
a cycle. We went from Yevgeny Prigozhin, Putin chef, turned like, you know, mercenary warlord who, you know, does a lot of work for the Russian military abroad, not just in Ukraine, but like places like Syria and Africa, etc. Basically, you just saw like, wait, I remember seeing one article come up about being like potential coup in Russia. And I was like, wait, what the fuck? Then you look and you're like, oh, they took over Rostov, which was home of the Southern Military Command, which is basically running like the war in Ukraine. A lot of the decisions are being made there, and then marching towards Moscow. And you saw like planes being shot down,
fucking
like trenches being dug up, people like opening their arms to the Wagner mercenaries, being like, yes, please, you are our new overlords, and other people getting mad at them. It was just quite a thing. And then suddenly, next thing you know, he's like, okay, you know what? We don't want to shed blood, so we're gonna go back because that was the plan. So we were just pump faking a coup.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very, very odd.
And now, so it definitely feels like that. So the explanation for what happened here is the official or unofficial explanation that seems to be prevailing on Monday morning or like most of the weekend was that Prigozhin had like negotiated a soft landing for himself in Belarus.
Yeah.
And that Putin, so it just feels like, I don't know, not very strong man, out of character with Putin, like the guy who normally puts plutonium in your tea if you cast out on his professional hockey like scoring records.
Right.
You'd expect him to have like more of a response, and instead it feels like the story is that he was just like, yeah, let's continue to work together. I love this energy from you. Let's just, you know, focus it on Ukraine.
Okay, I get it. You actually kept that same energy from the Telegram group chat. And you weren't fucking around. Okay, note taken. But again, yeah, like it is wild because Prigozhin apparently allegedly cut a deal for all of the people that were involved in the uprising, and saying that they would not face prosecution for fucking treason or whatever. And then also the ones that didn't participate would also get military contracts. We don't know if any of that's happening. And again, like you said, Prigozhin was like, I'll exile to Belarus.
Right.
But you're like, wait, what? What you like, you were just going like so hard on like, we need to fucking kill all the Ukrainians and all this shit. And now you're like, all right, I'm exile in Belarus. Who knows what's going to happen to the Wagner group now, because you'd imagine Putin would probably do a lot to start dismantling that based on what the fuck just happened. But the one thing a lot of people are pointing out is that people have not heard from Prigozhin or like the official Wagner like Telegram group. Like a lot of it has gone silent. So a lot of people are like, oh, maybe that's how you fucked up, is by thinking that Putin would make a deal with you after all that. So again, it's hard to know because we don't know where things have landed, because we just don't know. It's so
we
early.
We don't know.
Somehow,
like, if Putin disappeared Prigozhin, I feel like people would, like, feel like the world is safe again. They're like, yes, back to a world where Putin is murdering people mysteriously and not acknowledging it. Because, like nobody's heard of him from him. They're saying he might have been disappeared.
Yeah, I think but it goes to show too, like how used to his like autocratic fucking iron fist approach to rule that like suddenly like, wait, what? Like you're getting you just ran out of Moscow because you were so shook that Prigozhin was coming to town.
That's so very unlike you. Like, is that confirmed that he left Moscow?
It seems to be in a lot of the reporting was that he left like as this was all happening, and so did many other people were trying to leave Moscow too, like the flights were like tripled in price almost. But what's kind of interesting is like this is a situation where Putin has his back to the wall, like domestically, right? Like where it's like, dude, they're apparently coming for your ass.
Yeah.
And then somehow it all kind of settles and everything's okay, nothing to see here. But also, like, he didn't handle it in a way that people would have expected, which is, like, super violent or whatever the fuck it is. And I think it's having effects all over. Like, at the time, a lot of other countries in the former Soviet bloc were like, yo, is this our shot right now?
Right.
Like, while they're all fucking on the back foot. And then in China, too, I know the government is also, like, the perception there is that Russia has been, like, in fact, like, you know, strong as shit. Like, nobody's taking Putin down. And then to see this news, a lot of people are like, what? I thought,
So their state-sponsored media has been mainly telling the story of, like, Russia is just rolling on Ukraine.
I mean, it is true. Like, while that was happening, like, they were still fighting in Ukraine. And, like, you know, there were some pretty gnarly counteroffensives happening. But I don't know. I think the really confusing part is, like, how did you go from we're marching on Moscow to suddenly being like, okay, I'm going to go to Belarus exile.
Yeah.
Some think it's like the KGB, or not the KGB, the FSB were going around to some of the families of like Prigozhin's top people and being like, yo, you can get got right now.
Right.
Kind of thing. So I don't know.
That makes sense. Because it didn't seem like whatever his strategy was, like there was a noticeable thing that got in the way. So it was presumably something happening behind the scenes.
Nina Khrushcheva was on Democracy Now, and she's Nikita Khrushchev's granddaughter.
Yeah.
She was saying, like, this is a really interesting kind of conflict, because in Russia, when you have these kinds of events, it's typically reformers coming out against like the old guard. And this feels like a group that is like a full-on militarized fascist group trying to come after the very militant Putin regime. Right. And it's like, yeah. Whoa, from that side? They're like,
full military,
like,
kid.
That
yeah,
is,
yeah.
That's a little bit, that's a little bit new around
here. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a little scary. All right. So those are all theories of what happened, but actually Fox News knows
right.
what's going on here.
Yeah.
And we'll get into their explanation for what's happening in Russia in a moment.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Yeah, so Maria Bartiromo has a theory of what's actually happening here.
Is it that it's a complicated geopolitical thing? Is it an internal struggle between the warlords and the military and not agreeing on Ukraine strategy?
Wow, do you work for the Biden administration, Miles? Because it sounds like you're just kind of spitting their talking points.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I have taken money from them in the past, but that's neither here nor there. But let's check in with Maria.
Does it break through and become a real problem?
The White House wanted to give the media something else to cover. And this is the MO. This is exactly the way they do things. In fact, on Friday, I said, wow, what a blockbuster WhatsApp message. I'm sure there will be an enormous story over the weekend that the White House is going to be pushing to take this story off of the front page. And sure enough, we've got the State Department drumming up all the drama that took place over the weekend in Russia. So I don't know if it's going to break through. The mainstream media has an excuse again not to cover it. They're covering everything about Russia and the Wagner Group.
Yeah, it's true.
As if it really...
Yeah, okay. As I think you said, as if it really matters. Yeah, I don't know. A coup in a nuclear-armed state?
The most nuclear-armed state? by a, like, just off-their-rocker
Maria,
white supremacist military.
So what, I don't know what she's trying to say. That the U.S., like, and through the deep state, and I don't know what, I guess presumably, like, CIA operatives were able to get the Wagner Group to actually go through with an attempted armed insurrection, or it's all crisis actors and it's all visual propaganda and that's why, or how does it work again? Who called who to make this happen? I'm trying to figure that part
unclear.
Out. I want to believe you. I just need a little bit more logic.
Vague insinuations is kind of seems to be how this is working. This is also after Senator Marshall Blackburn suggested that the missing Titanic sub was also just a calculated distraction from the case against Hunter Biden. So the Biden administration's been very busy.
Yeah, I know. Putting people on submarines.
And the WhatsApp message is he was like leaning on somebody to pay him by saying, like, my dad's the president. Don't you know who I am? Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess that, but I don't know. I've been seeing the
fact that, like, people recognize and have made peace with the fact that Hunter Biden is, like, the greatest, most elaborate fail son that we've ever seen. And
or
people
like
just like, yeah, I mean, it seems like Biden knows he's a real fuck up.
Or the biggest threat to America is Hunter Biden, way all this energy is being put on it. It's like, y'all have more energy for Hunter Biden than fucking Al Qaeda right now.
Yeah.
Like, it's again, everything is in service of Hunter Biden right now. Okay. Yeah. He has the gravitational pull of the sun, the SON.
Mr. Beast said he declined to join the submersible trip. Did you see that?
That makes sense. Oh, like he was like, was he offered a ride on it?
On that one, yeah.
Because another YouTuber did it and said it felt fucking jank when he went on it. And I don't know if they went to fucking Titanic depth. But again, I think that just shows you the kind of like PR campaigns, man. It's like remember that thing Anna shared in the group text, Sheehan?
Yeah. So what was that? I actually didn't fully.
Oh, that shit is wild. So Shein, which is like huge fast fashion company, like I think they're probably the biggest now. They sponsored these influencer trips to go to their factories in China. And like it was total propaganda. Like the concerns are like, what are the working conditions in these factories? Like, what are the fucking like materials being used? Like, what's the process to do all this stuff? Like, I hear there's child labor. And like they were just brought to these like pristine factories that are like not crowded. Everyone's like smiling. And like the tone of a lot of this influencer content was like, I'm even talking to some of the factory managers right now. And I asked you guys, post some questions you want me to ask. And I said, what about the working conditions? And he said, they have really good wages, that's really competitive, and that they don't use bad labor practices. So, and from what I saw, it looked really clean. And you're like, you've been fucking played. But again, it's funny how much the sort of PR propaganda campaign is so much a part of everything we do now from every company.
That was one of the strategies that the sugar magnates used, is like they invited a journalist who was even like just threatening to maybe be critical of them. They like invited them to the factory, like this PR tactic of like, we can have a single good location where we're not abusing people.
Come look at this one.
Harming people.
Yeah.
Look at this very carefully cultivated, specific press op that we've put
together.
And
also, I got to say, I love the fucking 5-star accommodations they gave me during this trip. The food was excellent.
It's like, right.
It's just so wild how when you look at it, you're like, do you not see what they're doing to you?
Yeah.
And, but again, I'm sure they know kind of what the deal is, and that's why they accept the trip.
Did you see the picture of JFK Jr. Or RFK Jr. being Shredsville?
Dude, I honestly thought someone used AI to make it look like he was like a Sureño in fucking Pelican Bay or some shit. It looks like a jail yard.
Yeah.
He's built like he's been, you know, locked down for fucking 20 years.
Yeah. He's big. It's a shirtless photo, black and white. He's got big muscles. And it also like made him make more sense to me somehow, because he's like hanging out with like LA personal wellness people, it seems like, who have always had some interesting questions around vaccines, I feel like. And then also just like that scene in Succession, like the I love you, but you're not a serious person thing. Like he's just, you know, because of his name, people like lend gravity to whatever he says and have since he was like a child. But totally. He's mainly an idiot who like gravitates towards the most provocative thing he thinks will make him sound as smart as people expect him to be.
Well, yeah. And he's like one of those broken clocks where he's like right about a couple things.
Yes.
And then you're like, oh, well, I mean, like he is like anti-war. Like he is talking about how we have like misplaced emphasis, like in our economy and things like that. But then he goes back to being like the Wi-Fi, though. You're like, okay, hold on. Shut up, dude.
Yeah.
Please.
This puts him in the category that people will now be like, who are you going to trust on your medicine? This pencil neck dipshit, like picture of a doctor, or this, like, I've seen it with like Joe Rogan before, where they're like, or this guy who's, you know,
who's fucking carved out of solid granite.
Deep. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. He's like, yeah, RFK Jr. can do a bunch of steroids, doesn't even get the back knee. That's how next level he is. Dude, his forearms look like fucking Christmas hams, though.
I know. Yeah. I figured I shared this picture with you mainly because I figured you'd be.
They look like Christmas hams. Trump is terrified right now. He drops out of the race. He's like, before, I've seen the other guys. Christie, not really worried about him. Tim Scott, kind of feathery. Spaghetti arms, but RFK, my God, biceps like Christmas hams. I got nothing for this.
Forearms like also Christmas hams.
All the way through. I don't know. If his forearms are Christmas hams, I don't even know what to call those biceps. Oil drums.
All right. Whew. Let's take one more break and we'll come back and talk about some more popular culture things. Have you seen anything from the popular culture this weekend?
Well,
we definitely did. We'll be right back.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh,
yeah. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back, and the world said hello to Grady Dick at the NBA draft.
Oh, yeah. If you actually, if for people who may have been confused on the last social post for the show where Jack was Grady Dick and I was Adam Silver, that's Grady Dick. That was
that is Grady Dick. Say hello.
A guy with a super long neck.
He was drafted 13th by the Raptors.
Yep.
He wore a fabulous suit to the draft.
Beautiful like a suit.
Just beautiful. A bejeweled turtleneck.
Sequined.
Yeah, the turtleneck is like ruby slipper. Like, it all looks like it's made of the material that Dorothy's shoes are made from in Wizard of Oz.
Because he's not in Kansas anymore. That's why he
did
that.
That's right. Yeah. It's great. It all works together. I was not aware of him, really, until I first started seeing pictures. And again, immediately thought it was BJ from Righteous Gemstones, which like a lot of people commented on. They were like, "This he's really giving big, you know, the husband from Righteous Gemstones energy." Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was drafted 13th, which I think is like not far from where he was expected to. But people were like, "Oh, man, like, could you imagine if he just like just sat there being unselected wearing that jacket?
Rubbing his mitts? All right, with the 27th pick, here we go.
Here we go.
What the fuck?"
But then, I mean, just so now that I know who he is, like, you shared a reel of him on social, like, dancing.
His best TikToks, man.
Oh, man. What
this
a
kid. Got the riz, man.
He's got the riz. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm like, is it is it that his is it? I don't think his riz comes, you know, let me put on my spinny Gen Z cap really quick. Like, is his charisma from the fact that he is just has it coming off his skin, his pores? You just like, get out of this man's way. Or is it because he owns who he is so well? Because it's not he's not the coolest looking guy or the best dancer, but he loves you can tell he loves doing it.
Yes.
And I think that's probably what it is. Like, you're like, oh, this guy's in his joy zone. Go ahead. I'm not going to get in the way.
The name is not hurting either. Grady Dick is, it just sticks in your brain. Grady, I'm not going to confuse that with Porzingis. I'll tell you that much.
Definitely not.
Prigozhin, try a new name.
Maybe. Try
drop
Grady
the Prigozhin.
Dick. Yeah.
Just call yourself Porzingis. But yeah, Grady Dick. I mean, it's like close to Gravy Dick, which is an image that just kind of burrows down into the dark recesses. Like, did that go through your head? Gravy Dick? No.
Yeah, it was not like gravy specifically, but it did sound like a description of a dick. Like, I call them Grady Dicks.
He's got that.
You know? So I didn't quite go gravy, but I did think of it as an adjective.
I think gravy dick. I don't think grade E dick, like it's below an F.
Oh, God.
Which would be not great.
Grade E for excellent.
Yeah, grade E.
Like when you're in kindergarten.
For excellent. His neck is also the longest neck I've ever seen on a human being. I'm hoping the Raptors aren't going to bring him in and be like, whoops, he's actually a 5'11 guy with a 2-foot long neck. Because kind of appears when you look at a picture of him, like that might be what's going on.
Right. The turtleneck is a cover that he's all neck.
Yeah.
Like, no, man. Look at ain't that tall. It's all neck, man. If he didn't see a screen coming from that blind side, he might his head might snap off from the impact.
Yeah.
It's so wobbly up there.
A little wobbly.
When they asked him about the suit, he said, quote, "I'm just being goofy in myself. People are going to think I'm crazy, but the mentality was that I'm going to wear this suit probably once in my entire life, so I might as well just go all out."
Love it.
And there you
love
did.
It for him.
You did it, Grady. You
I
did
hope
it.
He never stops wearing that suit. The shoulder pads also are an important statement that I'm hoping this brings them back to NBA draft suits. I think in some cases, these are long, lanky men who could use a little shoulder pad action to fill out their frame.
Absolutely.
Wembanyama looked pretty good in his teal suit, I gotta say.
Yeah, but this took all the energy.
Like, yeah, I don't care honestly, about Wembanyama anymore.
Maria Bartiromo should be asking why Grady Dick pulled up like this.
That's right.
Because honestly, more than other really, you know, relevant news things, I spent a lot of energy talking about this guy's suit.
Yeah.
And that's an easier op to run, I think, Maria.
All right. Lance Armstrong is back and he is concerned about fairness in sports, despite the fact that it's literally Lance Armstrong. He seems like he's going in an OJ direction. Like the OJ zone where like your public persona is having the gall to say something that like people just can't.
Oh, like I think that one man murdered his ex-wife.
Yes. But
that's just me. I'm OJ. Now watch this swing.
And I know a thing or two about the carceral system.
Like, right.
So, you know, most famous cheater in the world, Lance Armstrong.
Yeah, one of them, just, for sure.
Just went real hard in his career. Like, I still remember that Nike ad where he came out, like, tried to get ahead of the story and was like, a lot of people say he couldn't win the Tour de France without being on something. He must be on something.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I'm on. I'm on my bike.
I'm on this bike.
5 a.m. I'm on my fucking grind, son.
Okay.
That's what I'm on. And then it turns out he was doing all like cheating in every way possible. It was like that scene in, is it Spies Like Us, where he's like got the answers like in his mouth, in his watch.
Oh,
like,
right.
In his glasses. He was like a very gifted cheater, I would say. Like the level of complexity that was going on was pretty intense and impressive once you heard all the details. But anyways, he's trending on Twitter now after he posted a promo video for a podcast series he's making with Caitlyn Jenner, all about trans women competing in sports. And Armstrong claims to be uniquely positioned to talk about this since he's a cisgender disgraced cyclist.
Yeah. As someone who's taken testosterone to cheat people, I mean, in the athletic world, I guess. Like, what the fuck are we talking about?
Yeah.
It's fucking wild, too. Like, that whole announcement, too, he's like, I think it's worth talking about. It's worth a spirited debate or some shit is what he said. And then Dawn was like, I think you can be supportive of the transgender community, but also what about the transgender question? Like, then you like pivot to like this very grim talk about like,
right,
like the fairness of it. You're not there to talk about the fairness of shit. You're, again, you want to talk about unserious people. It's this man talking about his concern with the fairness of fucking anything. And then Caitlyn Jenner using her, you know, trans identity, her clout that she has, or I guess the notoriety she has as a trans woman and athlete, to be like, and hey, we're the authorities on this in a time where there's so much rampant homophobia and transphobia. To me, it's like, if you're going to actually, if this is like a threat assessment, right? If I'm being really charitable about his motivations and you're trying to say, I'm doing this because it's worth talking about, because I'm thinking that these athletes are maybe going to be victims, but I'm only seeing a handful of athletes that are picked out very intentionally to sort of perpetuate this narrative about the danger of trans athletes. And if I'm actually looking at people that are in danger, it's actually trans people.
Yes, exactly.
Have a fucking spirited debate about the fucking like legal vilification and dismantling of their lives.
Yeah.
That's probably worth talking about rather than your fucking five people like who lost a swim meet and you're like, we got to start talking about this.
Even focus though on these people, what
a lot of research
that
shows
them feel for 15 minutes after that.
Yeah.
He's like pretty openly misogynistic. This is the first time he's ever commented on women's sports at all.
The cynic in me is like, if he does, it's just to be to talk about. It's like, this isn't as good as the NBA. This isn't good as like the fucking MLS or some shit.
Yeah. He, in 2003, when his team's Sognor, is that how we're pronouncing that?
Dude, I saw that fucking word and I started talking about canapes. It fucked me up. I have no idea what the fuck.
I looked it up. It's like your team masseuse. It's like your
actually a swanja.
Swange.
Swanja.
Swanja was one of the first to go public with doping allegations, and he demonized her and called her a quote whore.
When someone brought up the fact like this motherfucker might be cheating.
Yes, in 2003. Somebody who worked for him. And then when another woman, the wife of one of his teammates, made the same totally accurate allegation, he called her a, quote, crazy bitch, but specifically reiterated to her and the press that he never called her a, quote, fat crazy bitch, which I don't know the specific details of that game of telephone, but it just, you know, truly a piece of shit who's never given any thought to women's sports of any sort.
No, if anything, he's just outing himself as a fucking idiotic transphobe.
Yes.
And he's using, it's just concern trolling of like, and walking your way into transphobia, being like, it's not that I'm saying anything's wrong. I'm just concerned.
Yes.
I'm concerned. That's why I'm talking about it. But your concern is misguided and misdirected and isn't even reasonable, because if you're concerned to be with people who are absolutely facing a terrible outcome because we're legislating against them being able to live their fucking lives. How about that? Get on your bike and go do that one.
Yeah. Seems like a real piece of shit. Just his whole energy is so like I feel like he's going to be, I haven't looked at his clothing, his wardrobe in this, but I feel like he's definitely frozen in like the late night, like when he was at his peak fame, right?
Oh, like, yeah, it's probably, yeah, it's like aughts, tight t-shirts.
Yeah.
He's wearing tight t-shirts, skinny jeans, itty bitty jeans, slick back hair. Right.
And finally, we like to check him with the box office. The big story from this weekend's box office was that The Flash declined 73% in its second weekend. So first weekend was a big disappointment.
Yeah, powered by morbid curiosity.
Yes. And then this weekend, 73% decline, because everybody who saw this movie and wasn't involved in the marketing campaign that they apparently had going. Stephen King, I'm still a little... So, Stephen King called it like one of the best movies he's seen in a long time on Twitter. I still remember that. Like it was like a couple months back before it came out.
Stephen, and
I was like, huh. So are we? What's is this?
So are,
just
are
a,
you? Are you bad?
Are you, can be bought. Turns out, but yeah, it's just there's absolutely no appetite for this movie. Because they like the DC universe was like, all right, we're not doing this anymore. So these are just kind of leftovers. It's like a lame duck movie from like a lame duck franchise. So and then it turns out it's also bad. So there's not right. there's not much to power people wanting to go see it. So Across the Spider-Verse returned to the top slot. Pixar's Elemental was in second. And then right behind The Flash was No Hard Feelings, starring Jennifer Lawrence. As a woman willing to have sex with an introverted 19-year-old just for a used Buick is kind of the premise. We looked at the trailer, I think, when it first came out. But it's like a raunchy R-rated comedy that they don't make anymore.
Ribald even?
Ribald.
Can we even bring that word back? I remember that was the way when I was at the video store looking at 80s comedy movies and trying to figure out where there'd be naked ladies. I would see if they called
it ribald.
Yeah, like, is this a ribald comedy? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, kid, it's ribald.
Yes, it's R and R for ribald.
Right. JM, our writer, went and checked it out and said it was genuinely weird being in a packed theater full of people like laughing and groaning in discomfort at various parts. Like it's like the first one of those movies to come out in the theater since Bridesmaids. There's a scene where Jennifer Lawrence's character, Maddie, beats the shit out of some teenagers on a beach while completely naked.
She's naked, beating up teenagers.
Yeah. And this is basically being sold as like Jennifer Lawrence is funny, the movie, which definitely makes sense. Like she does seem funny and like that's a big part of her public persona, but it doesn't feel like it's ever been like fully... the premise of one of her movies. Like
never.
I even saw on social over the weekend, people were like, I work at a movie theater, and the way you can tell someone is an actual movie star is when people come up to buy it, they don't even like know the name of the movie. They're like, I'll take two tickets for Jennifer Lawrence, please.
Oh, really?
And they were like, you get it with her and Tom Hanks, and that's basically it these days.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I think I'm like trying to think of when she's ever had a bit of comedy in her role, or yeah, like a role that's a little bit comedic, and I'm like, I can't remember.
Yeah.
I mean, you always see her like do stuff like on like, I don't know, like was she on SNL? I'm sure doing stuff here and there, like, I guess maybe, I wonder if that's like her thing. Like, she's like, I want to be a comedian, like telling all her reps. She's like, I'm done with this fucking acting shit. I want to do ribald comedy.
Mm. Yeah. And it did like kind of middle of the road. It's like it did well for an indie comedy, but it's actually a big studio comedy because it has her in it. And
yeah, what's that fee like for her to be in it?
I think they said $25 million, maybe. So the budget is reportedly actually around $70 million. there's your problem. There it is.
Oh, yeah. But I guess like I get why so many people are talking about it, because we've kind of lost this genre of film, you know, and people are like, I don't know if this does good. Maybe we'll see it come back.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know.
So there's another R-rated comedy coming with Will Ferrell voicing a like dog with I think Jamie Foxx. It's called like Strays, maybe Strays.
People
are kind of looking to for keep the R-rated comedy alive in theaters.
Why do you think is there a reason you think it died? Is it probably because it's just like a marketing like potential like disaster zone where you like you could go all in, and then some people are like, man, people aren't going to the movies for that right now. Like all those people we used to sell American Pie tickets to now are parents.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know.
It's probably just like hard to gauge. And also they all seem like, I don't know. First of all, you don't get any respect in Hollywood for having like a successful, like you don't get any of the awards or any of the self-serious shit that people seem to respect in Hollywood. And then,
like, what weren't we saying, like, in a more revisionist version of the Academy Awards, like, Bridesmaid should have won more awards?
Yeah. Right? I mean, especially in considering the performing, what was out there. The performance categories, like, those are the hardest roles to pull off. But comedies get ignored at award season, and probably, like, when it comes to, like, whether you're hired or fired. But, like, of the, like, box office phenomenon in our lifetime, like, you know, The Hangover was wild. Like, that was one of the last times I remember a movie that's like opened wide and like done well. And then like the next weekend did like even better. Like it kept like growing and growing just on like word of mouth. So
right.
There are these examples of hits. So it doesn't totally make sense that they would just be like gone completely. But I think it's just the version of Hollywood that we have right now that is like, well, but when's the part where there's a lightning portal in the sky? Because that's the only way people know they're watching a movie. Otherwise, like, just release it on streaming.
How come the dad didn't get hit in the balls a bunch? Right. What? No. It's wild that, like, when you look at that, like, when you search highest grossing, quote unquote, comedies, first one, Minions, The Rise of Gru.
Yeah. That is where comedies have gone, G-rated and PG-rated shit.
For the birds.
That's right. All right, those are some of the things that are trending on this Monday morning. We are back tomorrow with a whole ass episode of the show. Mm-hmm. Until then, be kind to each other, be kind to yourselves, get the vaccine, don't do nothing about white supremacy, and we will talk to y'all tomorrow morning. Bye.
Bye.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. take good care, and we'll see you there.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.